So have y'all ever had Brewster's ice cream?
No.
Okay, I went off the wagon this weekend. I was not eating keto Saturday night.
The keto wagon, okay.
The keto wagon.
You really got to clarify that, Katie, because otherwise we're about to have a very different conversation.
No, the keto wagon. Went off Saturday night through Monday night.
Okay.
Didn't mean to, but totally happened. Brewster's ice cream.
I think you meant to.
Huh?
Like, you meant to eat these
things.
Like,
I mean, I did.
It's not like you fell into a vat of ice cream and like, had to eat your way out.
With your mouth open.
Like, no, get me out. No, okay.
I have no choice.
I must eat it.
Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How we doing, Patrick?
And Katie Phillips.
Hi, Patrick.
Hello, how are y'all?
Pastor David seems a little excited.
No, I'm good. I'm just excited.
Doing jumping jacks.
I like recording the podcast. Yeah. I enjoy my time with you all. This is energizing for me.
Sure.
We're here together. We get to come and talk about exciting stuff.
All of our listeners are here.
Yeah.
Well, today we're going to talk about some news that we've got
Katie's going on. Still giving me weird looks for my excitement.
I'm good. I'm good.
Usually we just go over some weird news, but now we have some big news that we're going to be looking at. Yeah.
Wait, the big news is now?
No.
Oh, we weird news and then big news.
Yeah, right. But we're going over some news.
Times we're saying news. I don't know when to be.
Oh my gosh. I'll give you the cue. I'll give you a signal here.
Okay.
All right. The news. Christianity in the news. And so we're going to take a look at that. And all of this is actually how Christians are interacting with the LGBTQ community.
Okay.
Well,
one of the articles isn't about Christians specifically, but I still find it interesting.
So. All right. Fair enough.
All right. But first, we have some news.
We're going to get one of those applause signs for Katie.
Candystore.com.
Candystore.com.
Are you familiar with candystore.com?
I'm not.
But although I'm back on the wagon. So.
Has surveyed over 30,000 of its customers on their least favorite Halloween candy.
Ooh, yes.
And now they have compiled their top 10 least favorite of Halloween candy. There's a new number one. I can tell you there's a new number one.
A new least favorite?
A new least favorite.
So number one is actually the bottom.
Number one is the bottom, okay. Yes. So we are going to actually have a look at me. I have the list of 10.
All right.
We're going to see if you can name how many
I can name my 10 least favorite.
I can name mine for sure.
Yeah, now this list of 10 is a little interesting here because I can say some of these are not candies you would get often. I think while trick-or-treating.
Okay.
But I have heard of every one of these candies.
You've heard of them. Okay.
Yes.
I'm guessing Bit of Honeys are on the list.
Bit of Honey coming in at number 10.
Ouch. I really thought that'd be further down. That's way down on my list.
Right,
bit of Honey is not a good candy. It's very chewy.
It's not even candy. It's
it's honey. It's a Bit of Honey.
Here's mine. Bottle caps. Can't stand them. Don't like them.
I don't even know what bottle caps are.
It's like a cross between a Smartie and Sweet Tart.
Oh, yeah.
I would rather have one of the. Do not put them together.
Why don't you just get a real bottle cap? Just put that in your mouth.
Bottle caps is not.
Oh,
the list.
Sad day. What are those peanut butter things that
broken
are
broken shards of glass? It's broken shards of glass on the list of things.
No.
They keep it at number 11.
The ones that are peanut butter and they're white and they have the brown stripes down them.
Like, all right, that is on the list. It's actually called a peanut butter kiss. It's number three on the list. That's what it's called. Peanut butter kisses.
It's not connected to Hershey's Kisses.
It is not connected to Hershey's Kisses.
It's like in the clear wrapper.
Or a Reese's Pieces.
Yeah. Reese's Pieces are not on the list because they're delicious.
And it's not a thing.
Everybody loves Reese's Pieces.
They're Reese's Pieces, but all right.
Whatever.
For long-time listeners, they'll get that joke. Yeah, so those peanut butter kisses are number three. Those are also terrible. Those are not good candies.
Man, I'm running out of like candy.
What about the flavored Tootsie Rolls?
No, those are pretty good.
I mean, it depends on the flavor
like
you get.
Those.
Yeah, okay. I'll tell you, Tootsie Roll's on the list, coming in at number six.
Really?
Tootsie Roll, number six.
Who's hating on the Tootsie Rolls?
You know, candystore.com does not like the Tootsie Roll.
I mean, I guess if you're like comparing it to other, so was this like they gave you a whole bunch of choices, or did you just have to like off the top of your head list your
Tootsie Rolls? I'm sure they gave you a bunch of choices.
I mean, Tootsie Roll's kind of like everywhere.
Yeah, it's one of my least favorite ones. Yeah,
I get that.
Yeah, it's kind of bland.
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't have like a really exciting flavor.
Oh, you know which ones I really don't like? They're like little candy balls that come in. They're like Sweet Tart balls or something. I don't know what these things are called.
Runts, Gobstoppers.
Ooh, I don't like Runts either. Also those. Is Runts on the list?
Runts is not on the list.
What about Gobstoppers?
Also not on the list.
I don't know.
Yeah, you're doing better here. All right, we'll go to the list over here.
All right, what do you got?
We'll go from 10 to 1. So 10, the aforementioned Bit of Honey. 9 is Good and Plenty.
Oh, yeah, those are terrible.
What are those?
Well, they're not good.
Like Mike and Ike. Mike and Ike.
Mike and Ike. Mike and Ike's are chewy. Good and Plenty's are
licorice.
No, Good and Plenty are more like a
candy
bar, aren't they?
No, they're little. They're very tiny.
They're in the purple box.
Yes, I think they are licorice-y flavored.
And they're licorice. Yes.
Number eight, black licorice.
Yep, licorice.
Oh yeah, no,
I actually like black licorice.
I like eliminate that from candy in my mind. Like I just don't even count it. So that's why it wasn't on my
list. It's a strong flavor. I don't hate it, but it is tough to eat a lot of.
Yeah.
Number seven,
tough to look at.
Smarties.
Wow, we got around Smarties. We just didn't say the right thing.
Well,
they're just really chalky. I think they're kind of boring, too. There's not really a lot going on there. Six, Tootsie Rolls. Number five, the Necco wafers.
Mm-hmm. Those are not like candy. Bottle caps.
Those should not be included.
They're just like another chalky candy. Yep. It's just kind of...
Smarties are better than those.
Are Necco wafers even being made right now? Because the New England Candy Confectionery Company
has
been bought out. So I'm just curious if they're even making those right now.
You know, write your local senator, your congressman.
I don't have to write I'm asking you. You're
the one. Candystore.com did not have this information.
All right, fair enough.
All right, number four, wax cola bottles.
Gross. What is a wax cola bottle?
I remember
So it's like a wax bottle. It has like a flavored syrup inside of it. So you like chew it up and the syrup comes out.
You eat the wax.
Yes. And it's shaped like a... Oh my gosh, I remember this.
This is so terrible. Why would you do that?
Three peanut butter kisses, candy. Number two, this is actually my least favorite, Circus Peanuts.
Mm.
In a candy thing?
You don't know, Circus Peanuts?
They're really little orange?
They're like peanut shaped, they're orange,
yeah.
They taste like styrofoam, they're real bad. Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty gross.
I thought you meant like people were handing out peanuts from the circus. Like peanuts.
Like I went to the circus.
It's called Circus
Peanuts. Here's some peanuts.
Kind of peanuts.
No.
Here's a handful of peanuts.
And number one, Circus Peanuts was the long reigning champ at number one. Now it's been overtaken by candy corn.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
I mean, candy corn is hated on a lot. I don't hate it, but it is a nod candy.
Oh, I like it.
It's odd, but I don't know, like, I mean, because you only get it in the fall.
I feel like it's a seasonal favorite.
Right. Yeah. So, like, I only want to see it for, like, 2 days a year, but I want to eat as much of it as I can in those 2 days.
I'll eat the candy corns. Oh, you know, I don't want a bunch of them.
Like candy corn.
You know, a handful of candy corn is good. Yeah.
This makes me want to get off the wagon.
Yeah. You're already off the wagon.
All right, So the blogger behind CandyStore said, the blogger behind CandyStore.com says, candy corn is nothing special, and there are absolute better candies out there. But if you enjoy stuffing handfuls
better bloggers out there.
Okay. But if you enjoy stuffing handfuls of candy corn into your pie hole, well, I don't know what to tell you. But clearly, I'm well in the minority.
Wait, did he just come up with this list himself?
I don't know who wrote this. This is CandyCornStore.com. All right, I'm sure you've seen this news. If you've been paying attention to your Facebook or, I don't know, wherever you get your news. Ellen DeGeneres.
Do we really...
Love
wait,
her.
Wait, hold on. Do we really consider Facebook now a news source?
I think people get news
stuff
from
Facebook.
Whether or not it's correct news, accurate news, or good news, people get it from Facebook.
Yep.
Fair enough. All right.
All right. Ellen DeGeneres, a bit of hot water.
Yeah.
Have you seen this?
We have.
Yeah. By hanging out with her friend. George W. Bush.
Yeah.
The two were sitting next to each other at a Cowboys-Packers football game recently with their spouses, and Ellen DeGeneres was criticized heavily for this move, for sitting with George W. Bush since he, I guess, was against marriage equality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people are saying war stuff, a lot of things critical of his presidency, and that Ellen should not be sitting with him. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, personally, I'm offended that they're at a Cowboys game.
Hey,
that's my problem. Right? if we want a more serious response, you know, I guess there are two issues here. I mean, one, how big I did not follow the story closely. So how big of an issue did she make out of it? Or was this an issue that somebody else took a picture and they made an issue out of it?
She made very little issue of it.
So it's not like she's like tweeting selfies of her and George Bush at the game. Not that that would matter, but like that's the difference. So someone else captured a picture of them at the game.
Yes.
And that blew up.
Now, she has responded to this on her show.
She has.
Right.
Yes.
And I think her response was awesome.
What was her response?
Let's I don't know word for word, but I know... I'm not going to give us a quote. But she did say, you know, at the end of every one of her shows, she says, be kind to one another. That's like her thing. And she says when she says be kind to one another, it doesn't mean to be kind to only people who... think like you and agree with you.
Sure.
It means to be kind to everyone. And she's, you know, has really just said, I don't agree with everybody and not everybody agrees with me, but that doesn't mean that we can't like each other and be friends and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I really liked her. I appreciated her response to that.
I think that's a valuable place to be. I think it's really hard to criticize her for being friends with a political figure who has not been in power for the last 11 years.
Yeah.
I mean, because we've talked even previously when we were talking about marriage equality around Barack Obama and his shift from the 08 campaign to the 2012 campaign to where we ended up in 2015, right? I mean, so even in those 8 years post-George Bush, there was a huge shift happening in the country, which is not to say that, you know, had George Bush been in presidency now that he'd be an advocate necessarily, but it also doesn't mean that he would have been opposed to what has happened. Like, and so I think we're making a lot of leaps based on something that's 10, 15 years out of date that perhaps is unfair to assume of him and his role.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would tend to agree, right? I mean, there is a, we have to be able to have dialogue with one another. If we can't sit down with people that we disagree with, even if that is at a Cowboys game, right? If we can't sit down and have a discussion with people that we disagree with, then all we're going to do is be shouting into an echo chamber.
Sure.
And, you know, I did read some of the response to this saying, you know, like, you know, real change only comes through, you know, pursuing advocacy, you know, boldly and not, you know, not just sitting down and being kind, but to, you know, pursue like kind of the, I don't even know how to phrase it because it's just not where I stand. There's a place for people to stand up and say, we can't associate with this. Right, like I'm not going to go out and associate with a Nazi hate group because that's just not a behavior that I think needs to be tolerated. George Bush is not a Nazi hate group, right? He's a president or a former president that you might have disagreements with and that might have political differences from anybody who gathers with him, but he's not here to try to hate or try to disparage any particular group of people from what I have read and seen.
Yeah, I think we probably are going to be in agreement on this one. I think if the standards of friendship are, or kindness are, this person has to meet X boxes for me to be nice, to sit with them, to enjoy them, I think we're going to be in trouble. And regardless of what side is saying those things. Because I think then, what is that? The incentive of like, you need to change so that I'll be your friend is kind of tough to say, like, but by pursuing kindness and friendship, even in the midst of disagreement, I think is valuable and important.
And there was another quote she had said, something about America has forgotten that it's okay to still be friends with people who don't agree with you. Like, and that people can think differently and it's still going to be okay. You know?
Well, I'm getting all choked up.
It's a emotional moment.
It is. We don't even know, and I guess she could have brought this up, but we don't know what the conversation was about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they could have been sitting there for an entire football game, which is what, like 3.5, 4 hours? They could have been sitting there talking about really meaningful stuff, and both of them could have been, you know, helping others or helping the other see other sides of an issue. Like, this would be a way to advance things. Like, and so I think we're making a lot of snap judgments based on a photo, and I think we need to get over it. Yeah. We need to spend less time concerned with our own selves and with the first image that we're seeing of people and more time getting to the bottom of something and assuming the best in people. I mean, this is Luther's take on the eighth commandment, if we want to go small catechism on it, right? You know, when we talk about the eighth commandment that we're not going to bear false witness against our neighbor, it's not just that we're not going to lie about our neighbor. It's that we are going to actively seek to do well by them and speak well of them until we have reason to think otherwise.
Right.
And so I think we've forgotten that in a lot where our first inclination is to assume that everybody's out to mess us over or to be against us. Whereas I think we would do well to give people the benefit of the doubt that maybe there's something happening that we don't understand, but they are working for the good of whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Last year I watched a documentary on Netflix called about this man named Daryl Davis.
About what?
About a man named Daryl Davis.
Oh, okay.
Called An Accidental Courtesy. Okay. It's about a guy, a black blues musician who intentionally befriends members of the Ku Klux Klan in order to draw them away from that that mindset and how they perceive the world. And he said through those friendships, he has drawn people out of the Ku Klux Klan that they've repented, recanted, and now disassociate from that belief and mindset. And I think it's a powerful documentary. You know, some things are really cool, some things are kind of weird.
Yeah.
But about this idea of like, through that connection, it does matter. I think that that really does help draw people out. Because like you said, seeing another point of view, exposing people to something else, helps so that so that you're not letting two sides be trapped in their own echo chambers where all they're going to hear is negative things about the other side.
Right.
But crossing over whatever cultural, racial, sexual lines is a valuable thing.
I did not watch it this closely. Did George Bush get any flack for sitting with Ellen DeGeneres?
You know, I'm not really sure. Probably not. It seems like the right has kind of forgotten about George W. Bush. They've kind of swept him under the rug moved on. Yeah. I mean, his chief of staff has said...
he still has a chief of staff?
Yeah, I assume.
How long do you...
Freddie Ford. That's the chief of staff, according to my article here. Okay. President and Miss Bush really enjoyed being with Ellen and Portia, and they appreciated Ellen's comments about respecting one another. They respect her. That's the statement coming from the Bush camp.
Sure.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I think that mutual respect and friendship is always going to be... always something to admire and you should pursue.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next little article here.
All right.
In a recent Democratic presidential debate.
Not the most recent, but.
Not the most recent, but a recent. A recent one. Yes. Seems like
we just had one last night.
Seems like they're all the time now.
Yeah.
We're narrowing it down, yeah.
Are we?
I don't think, it doesn't seem like it. Yeah. Well, Beto O'Rourke, Texan Beto O'Rourke.
From El Paso?
El Paso.
I'm still learning my Texas geography, yes, so I'm trying to.
So he was a House of Representative congressman from El Paso, ran for Senate here in Texas last year, did not make it, defeat Ted Cruz, but came probably pretty close, closer than
others
than most people would have imagined going into that race.
Sure.
He was asked at this thing, at a recent debate, let me get my thing here, do you think religious institutions like colleges, churches, charities, should they lose their tax-exempt status if they oppose same-sex marriage?
Mm.
Yes. O'Rourke said without hesitation, drawing applause from the Los Angeles audience. I'll move on. I'll give you his whole quote here.
Sure.
There can be no reward, no benefit, no tax break for anyone or any institution, any organization in America that denies the full human rights and the full civil rights of every single one of us, he added. So as president, we are going to make that a priority. And we are going to stop those who are infringing on the rights of our fellow Americans. What do we think here, Beto, Mr. O'Rourke saying these things about tax breaks? And we all are affected by this. I mean, we all work at a religious organization that gets a tax, that does not pay tax to the United States government. Mm-hmm.
We pay taxes, but the organization does not pay taxes.
Correct. Yes.
Just want to be clear in case the IRS is listening in that we are all up to date on our, well, I speak for myself. I'm up to date on my.
There we go. All right, well, let's get back to this. Yeah.
I think this is interesting,
okay.
Because so many times we hear separation of church and state.
Yeah.
And does that mean that the government kind of is supposed to stay out of church happenings? To me, that's what I understand the separation of church and state to be.
Yeah.
So, and not that I'm saying, you know, I'm against this. I
hear what you're saying. I think
churches can make their own choices, and I don't know that this needs to be a factor into whether or not they're saying what they are going to do and are not going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just interesting.
And I think here's a couple thoughts to consider, right? I mean, one is that the fact that religious institutions get any sort of tax break has already muddied the waters of the separation of church and state.
Correct.
If we had true separation of church and state, then the church would be just like any other institution, would pay taxes, would, you know, be financially responsible in any way a business would be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the only difference would be that it would serve a purpose of religious whatever rather than creating a product that is sold in a store. So we've already muddied those waters.
Right.
The other thing, and I think this is where the argument for Beto O'Rourke is coming from, right? Imagine that there's a group of, the Ku Klux Klan.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ku Klux Klan wants to start a church and claim religious status in the name of the Ku Klux Klan. We have created laws in this country to create or to help foster racial equality.
Mm-hmm.
And we have implemented laws to prevent systems, particularly colleges and things like that, from preventing racial equality.
Mm-hmm.
So colleges are not allowed to use race in their application process, even if they're a private religious institution.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a precedent for this sort of involvement. The question is just, is this the next logical step? And so, yeah, I don't know where I fall on this in particular. I'd have to give this more thought. Personally, I think I fall towards the side of, well, we just shouldn't be getting tax exempt status, period. Like, we should, if we want to take our faith seriously, we should stop expecting the government to treat us special. And I think a lot of the resistance to something like this comes down to Christians expecting the government to treat us special.
Yeah, I am going to say I have made up my mind on this.
Yeah.
And I hate it. Okay. I really, really hate it. It makes me really mad. And I'll go through a couple things here. One, I think it's not... I think sometimes we forget what this means. It doesn't just mean like evangelical Christians. This means any religious organization. Mm-hmm. That means every mosque in America would fall under this probably. Mm-hmm. Potentially, you know, Orthodox synagogues, Hindu temples, you know, these things also could have conservative viewpoints on marriage. So it's these are also potentially minorities in America could be affected by this. And probably the churches that would be most affected by this are going to be small churches. Mm-hmm. Churches that can't afford to pay a third of their tithing to the government and taxes without losing a staff member, losing programming, losing those things. It's probably if we had to take a third of Lord of Life's budget and send it to the United States government, one of the three of us would not work at Lord of Life. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably true. Mm-hmm. You know, and that our some of the programming that we do here at our church would not happen. Mm-hmm. Some of the outreach stuff that churches do into their communities would not happen. So, I mean, like, those things happen. But really why I hate this, and this is probably why it makes me the most angry, is for years I heard my more conservative friends saying, like, the liberals are coming after Christianity. They're persecuting the church. And I rolled my eyes and said, not true. They're not after you. Everybody wants to say, you can believe whatever you believe and just let other people believe what they believe and let that sit. And this is not that anymore. Mm-hmm. This is saying, if you don't agree with what the government says, we will take away your church's livelihood. Mm-hmm. And that's what, I think this is what Christians are hearing.
Well, and I think it also takes away choice for people. I mean, for churches and for people in general. They no longer get a choice in that. That choice is being made for you unless you can sustain your church and your whatever you're doing with a third of it gone to the government.
I don't argue with that. I think that's a valid way to see it. And I agree that that's probably what a lot of Christians are hearing when they hear this, which is why for me, you know, the stronger answer would be to just take away the tax incentive all that, like, don't make the tax incentive conditional on something, right? If you're going to have a nonprofit tax exempt status, you can't make it conditional. And so if you're going to make it conditional, you just have to take it away completely. Mm-hmm. And you just have to say, all right, that no longer exists and churches are just expected. And yes, ministry would have to look radically different. And a lot of churches would, and other ministries would hurt and suffer, but the church would persist, right? You know, one way or another, the Church of Christ is not going to be taken down by whether or not the United States government decides to institute a tax or not. Like, that's not going to be the thing that brings the body of Christ crumbling to its knees. From the government side, right, if I take off my pastor hat for a moment, from the government side, the problem is that when you allow institutions that are claiming this special status to continue processes of discrimination, you're never going to be able to quell discrimination. I mean, which is the same thing that happened with racial inequality. And now LGBTQ issues are the new racial inequality. They're the new, they're the new movement that was, you know, race riots in the 60s. It's that now. And so the government is working, and Beto is certainly more liberal, further left, if you want to think of it that way, in advancing these issues than other candidates and than other parties. But he's saying, look, if we're going to get rid of this, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make it so that people know that this is not tolerable. Mm-hmm. And if it is, then which is why, again, I go back to just get rid of the tax incentive. Just make it that churches pay taxes and stop making it conditional.
Yeah, again, I'm going to go this. It is difficult because from two sides of this issue are arguing from two different perspectives.
Yes.
The one is saying it's a civil rights issue. One is a religious issue. And it's hard to
Which is also a civil rights issue, right? Religious freedom is a civil right.
Yeah, so it's hard to say, you know, we're both can be arguing from a place of good faith, of strong belief in what they already are bringing to the table, and they're just not seeing the perspective of the other. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair statement. You know, kind of, you know, like our abortion debate, we have pro-life versus pro-choice, and those kind of mean different types of things to the people that are uplifting them. They're not, they're kind of dancing around.
Right.
They're both talking about it in one way that the other is not. And so I think that makes the conversation difficult.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is there. I do stand by, I think this is what people are hearing. And I think that for me, I think that this is a bad move by Beto and a bad move by the Democratic Party, because I think this is doing evangelical Christians who maybe not as satisfied with Trump and who he is as a human being, maybe are looking to vote somewhere else, but thinking, well, if I vote for the left, That's maybe my pastor's going to get fired. Yep. If I vote for the left, maybe my kids can't go on a mission trip. If I vote for the left, maybe the soup kitchen we run shuts down. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is making it tough. And so it's making it, instead of, I would say, yeah, there should be no rewarded tax break for churches that engage in political speech, that are giving their money to PACs and to groups, to politicians. That's an easy draw the line for me, because that's mm-hmm. saying you're overstepping a boundary that has clearly been drawn and that the United States is not really enforced. That, for me, that's an easy one to do. So Beto did try to clarify here. This is on MSNBC. He said, the way you practice your faith within your place of worship is your business, but when you are providing services in the public sphere and you deny equal treatment under the law based on someone's skin color or sexual orientation, then we have a problem. What do we think about this? Clarification.
Sure. So for me, I mean, now he's trying to get into semantics, which actually are really important semantics from the perspective of the church. Because when I, as a pastor, and this is going to relate to weddings most prominently, because that's the civil service that I do.
Sure.
I'm performing a marriage, not just on behalf of the church, but on behalf of the state. Mm-hmm. And so I sign a document that says you are now legally married in the eyes of the state of Texas and in the eyes of the United States of America. And so I'm not just acting on behalf of God. Mm-hmm. I'm acting as an agent of the state. And if I'm acting as an agent of the state, I'm no different than the county clerk back up in Kentucky when the 2015 Supreme Court decision first came down and she was refusing to issue. I mean, she's a ward of the state in the same way that I am functioning as a ward of the state in that capacity, which takes me to a more religious position. I keep coming back from this from a pastor's perspective. Then the church should just get out of doing state marriages altogether. Mm-hmm. We should say, go to the courthouse and get whatever marriage, you know, certificate the court or the state thinks you need to get. And come here and we'll do blessings, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll be glad to bless you to the cows come home. And as far as the marriage that you're celebrating, we can do the whole ceremony, except that at the end, I'm not going to sign a little piece of paper, right? Yeah. And so we've muddied the waters of church and state because we've made pastors instruments of the state by signing these documents. And so instead, get us out of state marriage and say, do that at the courthouse, whatever you need to do there. Mm-hmm. And we as a church are going to just do blessings, which is how any church could avoid falling into this problem, right? If he's saying that you can't discriminate based on this, then you say, right, we don't do weddings for anybody. Mm-hmm. The only thing we do are we bless marriages, and these are the only things that we recognize as marriages, but this is not a civil service, or this is not a civil service. We just bless marriages.
Yeah, yeah.
So any church could get around it in that way if they wanted to.
I think this clarification is a better statement, because I would agree, if you run a soup kitchen or a shelter within a religious organization and you refuse people based on race or sexuality, I would be against that. I think that's wrong. I think that's not something you should do. I don't think it's wrong if a church out there just says we hold a traditional view of marriage on their publication, on their website, on what they believe. I do not find that that would be worthy enough for the government to come in and intervene. Mm-hmm. You know, Christianity has been, you know, holding that view for a very, very long time. You know, so in the 10 years here in America, that marriage equality has been pushed greatest to the forefront of our social issues, to expect change that has been changing a system that has existed for 2,000 years, I don't think is going to happen overnight.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is a boogeyman that that people can point to reinforce their belief of the liberal left is coming after Christians. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that, because I want, whether you're left wing, whether you're right wing, to say, I want the government to do the government's thing for the sake of the church doing the church thing. And I don't need the government to come into Christianity.
Well, and I think this is, and I'm going to paint with broad strokes, but I think this is the problem with Christianity in America, where we are right now, is that we really love the idea of separation of church and state, so long as we still get the benefits of not having the church separated from the state, right? You know, as long as we still get all the benefits of being the primary religion, particularly Christianity, in the United States, then we're good with this. But as soon as anything starts to infringe on what we've become accustomed to, we feel like Christianity is under attack, when really we've allowed Christianity to be co-opted by these little moves that have happened over the history of the United States. And now I'm at a place where I'm really saying, well, we should just pull back. Mm-hmm. Like just pull back and say, we're going to take the initiative to separate church and state because the state's not going to do it for us. And then you have true religious freedom. So long as you're operating in a place where you're beholden to the church or beholden to the state, whether it's for tax incentives or for civil services, whatever, if you're beholden to the state, you do not have true religious freedom. And so if we're about religious freedom, which I'm all for, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Then go all the way.
Then go all the way and yep. pull back.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that this you know, this intertwining that's existed between church and state in America is going to be, it's getting tough to sever overnight.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do it. I'm just going to go home tonight. I'm going to get out my scissors, cut in the cord,
cut it up. Yes. Right. Yeah. I respect
no,
that. I think
no
you
more
do that. Yeah.
No more nanny state. I'm ready yeah. for I don't know where I'm going with that. I feel like there's another metaphor to be thrown out there. But.
Yeah, I have no idea what prompted Mr. Beto O'Rourke to do this. I assume
he was on a debate stage. Yeah. Getting a soundbite is what prompted him to. I mean, it's, yeah, he's catchy. It's, you know, he's mm-hmm. he's way behind in the polls. Yeah. He wanted to get his name in the paper. I mean, come on.
He is the only candidate that was asked this question. So no other yeah. candidate yeah, okay. Weighed in. I do think he is.
Everybody else said no thanks.
Yeah. He is definitely way behind in the polls. This is probably an appeal to maybe new voters to kind of boast sure. his polling.
Right.
At this point, I would say it's pretty unlikely that Mr. Beto O'Rourke is going to be the Democratic nominee for President of the United States.
I think it's also pretty unlikely that anything like that is going to end up in a Democratic platform.
Right.
I would agree with you. I
think anything to that extreme would end up in a Democratic
platform. I would also agree. They're also, the Democrats aren't looking to woo Christians to their side.
Right.
You mm-hmm. know, they also want Christian voters to come sure. to their side. And not just of mainline or more liberal Christian voters. They want conservative Christian voters to come to their side.
Yeah.
To say what we're doing is they're trying to appeal, saying this, what we're doing is more in line with Jesus than what you're getting from the Republican Party. And so this, I think, is throwing a stick in the spokes of, I think, that appeal. And that's why I really dislike it more than anything.
It's a weird political strategy for him. I don't think it'll have much long-lasting impact.
Yeah.
But it provided interesting conversation for
mm-hmm. us. Last article here. One more. All right. This is from Christianity Today. They're reporting on a national news thing.
Which day is it from?
Today.
Today.
Christianity
did you,
Today.
Did you get it off the news today? That's what I was.
Oh, my gosh. No, I did not get it off the news today. Teacher's lawsuit reflects evangelical educators' dilemma over transgendered pronouns.
That's quite a heading.
That is Can quite a heading.
Elaborate?
As an ex award-winning.
Award-winning.
High school newspaper editor.
I will say this is not a good headline.
I think that the internet has really taken away the craft of headline editing because you're no longer like bound by column inches.
Yeah.
And so
Teacher's lawsuit reflects evangelical educators' dilemma over transgender pronouns.
Yeah, it's not a good
headline. I have to read that slower.
It's not a good headline.
That's a lot of words.
Well, you are reading it upside
well,
down.
Well, now our headlines are either clickbaity or this, which is really boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not a good headline. Okay. All right, so.
Anyway.
So give us
headline
some
aside. Let's
I will give you the deets
here. Give me the deets.
Yes.
Is deets a thing we're saying now?
Yeah.
I've
watched this. Okay, this is another topic for another day. Well, go ahead.
Virginia public school teacher Peter Vlaming.
Virginia Peter Flaming?
Vlaming.
Vlaming.
Vlaming. Uh-huh. Yes. And I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Sorry, Peter.
Cited his Christian faith as the reason he declined to reference a transgender student with new pronouns. Mm. A school administrator replied that his personal religious beliefs ended the school door, according to a lawsuit filed last week. So it sounds like Peter Vlaming had a student in the class that was transgender. Peter would not use the student's preferred pronouns, did use student's preferred name.
Okay. So student had a new name and a new preferred pronoun.
Was still using the old pronoun then? Or was just was not it? Saying
I'll
anything?
I'll get into this. Was,
yeah,
was using
pronoun? Okay. What was the pronoun?
Was
strategy?
Using no pronouns.
No pronouns. Only using the name.
Only using name, avoided pronouns in reference to the student. This teacher
Which
was...
It's harder to do than you think. I mean, just try to go a day without using pronouns. It's exhausting.
Was fired from his job for doing this, and now is suing the school district. He's asking the court to grant him $1 million for lost wages, lost reputation, and emotional distress, among other alleged injustices. So that's what he's doing there.
So he's suing for lost wages and emotional distress.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we think about that? That's the question. What do we
that
think?
Is the question. Here we go. Another
well,
Christian
I think
in
this
the news.
Steps back to the episode that we did on the Billy Graham rule, kind of. Totally not the same.
That was while I was gone. So, yes. Yeah, let's talk about that. Because I got lots of things to say.
So people who were fired because they, like the police officer who was fired because they wouldn't go on a one-on-one train, whatever. I think it's similar. I know that it's hard to, for me anyway, my faith makes me who I am. And I think that that's really important. And I can also relate because this, I don't know how, I guess the transgender topic has just come to the forefront so much in the last few years. I mean, it, really this has not been.
Yeah.
This has not been go. And I'm sure it has been going on for years, but it has not come, to the limelight and to the forefront for all of us until recently. And so I even can admit, like, I struggle with what pronouns to use. I know that, and I'm learning, and I think it's something that we all are going through together, and we're all learning what to say, how to say it, when, sure. to, you know, and it can be confusing, to be completely honest. Like, it can be a confusing time for the individual as well as for the rest of us to be really honest. You know, it's mm-hmm. hard. And I can imagine as a teacher, having done that before, that you have a student who maybe you've known for a really long time
mm-hmm.
that is no longer identifying the way that you've known them. And then all of a sudden it has to be a switch in your brain real quick. And I mean, that's just, that sometimes can be very, a very difficult thing. Now here, it did specifically say they were just not going to use them at all on purpose because right. of their faith.
Right.
So that's a whole different.
This wasn't a, I have a long-standing history with a student
sure.
and I made a mistake.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
This was a conscious choice.
Right.
Right.
Now, there was a pronoun slip up that did happen. Maybe an inciting incident here. A
pronoun slip.
Yeah, they were doing an activity in class. They were guiding each other, I think, with blindfolds. And he said, don't let her hit the wall, inadvertently using the previous pronoun for the student.
Okay.
And the student told the teacher after class, you have your religion, but you need to respect who I am. So this is kind of an incident that did happen around a pronoun mishap.
I guess I'll go back to where Katie was for sure. a moment. I think that's a helpful perspective to mm-hmm. bring, right? Because even when I was in college, which was not that long ago, I'm certain that there were transgender students
right.
in school with me at the time.
Oh, for sure.
But nobody was telling me that they wanted to be referred mm-hmm. to by a different pronoun, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. That was not, and that was, I graduated from college in 2009. So that was less than, or just at 10 years ago. Oh,
right.
10 years ago. All right. That's my 10-year reunion. Should do something. Anyway, just had a little nostalgia moment. Sorry, folks. I'm back. All right. So, I mean, this has definitely come forward in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a rate of change that is very difficult for the entire culture of the United mm-hmm. States to catch up to, right? When we talk about systems and how systems change, any system can handle change, but it's the rate at which things are changing
yes.
that makes things yeah. so difficult, right?
Right.
So how to, and I think the rate of this change has really escalated in recent years and has been
mm-hmm.
very, very difficult for the culture to catch up mm-hmm. to. And I don't think we have caught up to it. I think your Billy Graham rule issue is probably where I would start with this conversation, right? Yeah, he's entitled to his religious freedom. Absolutely. But he's working in a public school.
Yep.
And she is attending a public school. And by law, the student and the teacher are both at a public school,
yeah.
correct?
All correct.
Right. Student and teacher both had a public school. And by law, kids in this country are required to attend school.
Mm-hmm.
And so we cannot allow a public school to be a place where we require kids to be and then allow people to mistreat them, mm-hmm. right? And so there has to be an accountability for the teacher. Now, if that's something that this teacher's religious convictions do not allow them to do,
mm-hmm.
there are other schools that they can teach at.
For sure.
And they can walk away from that. And they can protest it, right? They can resign. Mm-hmm. They can stand up and say, mm-hmm. I'm going to be fired for this as an act of protest of an unjust law. But don't expect to not be held accountable
and
for that when you're in a public
school. I will tell
setup.
You in this article, I liked that it did state that the student went up to the teacher and said, I need you to respect who I am. There were conversations happening
sure.
between
yeah.
student and teacher. Who knows for how long?
Well, hopefully the lawyers.
Well, whatever. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there
yeah.
was conversation
yeah.
happening. It's not like this was the second day of school and the teacher's trying to figure out what
right.
to say. You know, like, I mean, I get it, you know,
mm-hmm.
but this has been clearly going on for a while, enough so that the student feels totally fine going up to the professor and or the teacher
yeah.
and saying, I need you to respect who I am.
Yeah, it seems on the surface, and I'm willing to admit here, I think there's a lot happening behind the scenes that is interwoven within
yes.
this relationship
sure.
between teacher and school
mm-hmm.
and teacher and student, student and school that we don't know.
Yeah,
right. that
I agree.
Yeah,
that this article and any article I found does not cannot really get into.
Right.
You know, it seems like, you know, being willing to use a teacher's preferred name but not preferred pronouns seems potentially like a healthy compromise,
right.
like a way to at least start the conversation
mm-hmm.
right. of mutual respect between two opposing
mm-hmm.
viewpoints. But it's possible Mr. Fleming here was a jerk. Yeah. That he was just condescending and was making the student feel excluded in the classroom. Right. It's possible that he was doing as best he could and the asks were unreasonable. Right. I don't really know. Right. I think this is a big question. As we mentioned, the culture is moving very, very quickly, and Christianity and maybe many parts of the world are struggling to catch up. We do have transgendered students within our youth program, and it's tough. It's tough for some families. A new, you know, push of a teenager coming out as trans and then putting the pedal to the metal on transition very, very quickly.
Right.
That this was relatively new to our world. Of not just somebody coming out as trans, but saying, I'm trans and I want to live completely as the opposite gendered today.
Right.
And that is very, very fast for families, for culture, for friends, for teachers. Absolutely. Every person who traps that student, that is a very, very fast transition. And so that can be difficult, I think, for those around. I can say our transgendered students, I've certainly misgendered them accidentally. Yep. And I told our trans students, I will do this. This will happen from other students, from other leaders. We are working with you to make this better. But if the expectation is perfection on day one, we're going to fail you.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's just the way it is.
Yep.
And we have to ask our own questions of, now we have trans students. What does that mean? How do we do overnight trips? How do we address, you know, a gender-specific issues? This creates questions. For us, that maybe some people on both sides have very easy say there's very easy answers. Sometimes if you're caught in the middle, you're saying, I don't know how easy these answers actually are.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I think really and truly, you guys have done an incredible job with our youth group and our transgender children, that it's an open and honest. Children. They're still children. They can still be children.
Yeah. Everybody's children.
Anyway, they are. Everybody's a child. I'm like, oh, okay. Anyway, I say all that to say, you guys have done a really great job on just keeping open and honest dialogue. And exactly what you just said. Like, if you're expecting perfection, like, I can't give that to you.
Yeah.
But we are working on it. Like, we are trying and we are going to do better. And I think just having that open communication with kids is important. I don't really know in this article, I mean, I want to think there was communication there, but I just am now tending to lean towards he probably shouldn't have been a teacher there.
I guess this is where, you know, where I come back to. And my parents were both teachers in a public education system, right? And so I have a sense of what would it be like if that's the role that I was filling. And my faith is such that I genuinely do want other people to know the love of Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an important thing for me to share with other people as I'm having those conversations. And so if I genuinely want people to know the love of Jesus, the best thing that I think that I can do as a teacher is to respect them where they are and to show them that I care about them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how I can express my faith. And so, you know, referring to someone by a particular pronoun or a particular name does not, in my mind, affect my ability to show them that I love and care for them because Jesus loves and cares for them. Even if you think that transgendered stuff isn't right, Jesus still loves and cares for that child of God because they're still a child of God. Even, and I, you know, we could have that discussion another day, but they're still a child of God. And so how do we maybe go back to what Ellen said originally, right? We can go back to come full circle as we wrap up this conversation. How do we be kind to one another in the name of Jesus Christ, right? If kindness is a fruit of the Spirit, if we're called in Ephesians to be kind to one another, you know, how do we do that in a meaningful way when we disagree? Mm-hmm. And I think a piece of that is respecting someone's wishes when they say, I want to be called something different. Say, okay, I'm going to call you that, and I'm still going to love you because I still think Jesus loves you. And if the opportunity presents itself, I'll tell you what I think that means.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the way to go. This is, for me, regardless of where you are on this issue, I think is this really the hill you want to die on, Mr. Fleming? I mean, is this really what, where you really want to plant your flag is on a pronoun? Me personally, I would not, on any of those levels, I think, and there's no reason not to be kind in this situation. Mm-hmm. Even if you are a staunch conservative or more conservative on this issue of saying, I do not think that you could become another gender that's against the will of God. These are human terms, these pronouns that we've invented, you know, so you're saying he or she, you know, is not really, I think, going to do much one way or the other. But opening up the door to saying whatever chapter this student is writing right now, I want to be present in their life. And I don't know what the chapters that come after this, but right now I can be present, kind, loving, and show them that even though I may disagree with them spiritually or morally, there's love and compassion mm-hmm. between the two of us. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is far more valuable mm-hmm. than not using a pronoun. Right. And I think it's far more healthy for the health of the student and the health of the teacher. I think this creates an environment that's not healthy for either. Right. And I think that that's not something that we would ultimately desire. All right, well, that's our show.
Hey.
Yeah. All right. I do actually have a recommendation this week.
Oh, hey, what do you got?
Awesome. I do. Over the weekend, I watched a Netflix show that I highly, highly recommend called Unbelievable. All right.
I don't believe you.
Ooh. It's an 8-part show. It's a limited series, so it's only the eight episodes. It is based on a true story about a, it's pretty graphic. It's a crime drama. So two female cops in Colorado investigating a serial rapist, and one of these victims, who's actually in Washington, came forward, expressed these things, and due to police pressure, recanted her statements made it up. And now, and it really focused on not only the investigation between the two police officers, but how that recanted statement affects this young girl.
So,
it is incredibly powerful.
It started based on a radio show, and This American Life had aired that episode, or re-aired that episode. They had originally aired it a couple years ago, so I listened to that episode over the weekend, it's a fascinating and horrifying story.
So it's not just a pure crime drama. It's not just about like the investigation of like, are they going to get this guy? It really shows into how this has affected women and also what it meant for this young girl to be so vulnerable to go in the police station, say, and by young, I mean, she's like in her late teens, early 20s, to say this happened to her. And then since her story didn't add up, be pressured into recanting and really walking through like what that did to her. How it destroyed her family, her friendships, her job, her mental state, this deliberating attack against her. And then also there's some positivity at the end. I think it's at least ends on a as positive a note as I think it could in the midst of this. I think it's very well acted, very well portrayed. One of the police officers is a Christian, and it's neat seeing that perspective as well. I think it portrays her faith and how she approaches her police officer job really neat. I think it's really, really well done.
I will say the actual young woman that the story is based about was part of this radio interview, and she made a comment that she felt like this documentary, which is not a documentary, it's acted, but this miniseries does an accurate job of portraying. So it's not just super drama. Like, this is accurately how she felt and how she was portrayed. Like, certainly there are dramatizations in it, but she felt
that
it
was
unbelievable. It's eight episodes on Netflix. It is. You can burn through it pretty quickly. I binged it over the weekend. Timmy was sick, so I just held a sick baby and watched Netflix. So
sounds like a party.
Yeah. All right, where can you find us?
Hey, if you like what you heard today or other days, you can find us at beyondsundaypodcast.com. And of course, we're available on all your favorite podcast providers. That would be the iTunes, the Google Play, the Spotify, all the things. We're on all the places. So be sure to rate, review, subscribe, share it out with your friends, neighbors, shout it from the rooftops, all those good things. We would love to help you and your friends take your faith beyond Sunday morning. So we hope that you'll help us do that.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah, for sure.
Do that.
Do that. If they do not have any of those podcasts, I'll burn you a CD. You know,
I'll spread this. You're gonna burn us a CD.
I'll make a mixtape.
Oh, I love it.
He's got the A-track player.
We'll get it going. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Record on a 44.
Have a good week.
Yeah, have a good week.